My name is Sophie Bolt from the General Secretary of the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament. I became sort of politicised, I suppose. I kind of got involved in campaigning when I became a student. I was a mature student, and I went to university just a year before the introduction of tuition fees and the abolition of the grant under Tony Blair. It was very kind of radicalizing for me. I, believe everybody should have the right to be able to go to higher education without having to pay for it. And, it was a very big, significant part of my life. So that's kind of how I got involved in campaigning, and the rest sort of followed from that, really.
Yeah, look, Sophie, I can remember the 1980s going to some big CND demo in London about CREWS, and there was a sort of massive surge in the 1980s for the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament because people realised, well, if we're going to have these mobile missile launchers turning up down our street, that means we become targets for Soviet nuclear weapons. And it was just thought to be completely bonkers that people didn't want to be targets. How have things changed since those days?
Well, I mean, we're coming back to that time, aren't we? With having US nuclear weapons, it looks that looks likely that we're going to be having US nuclear weapons stationed at RAF Lakenheath, and now the British government has agreed to buy these F-35A fighter jets, which are US made, and they have been specifically designed to launch US nuclear bombs, which they will be based in Britain as well. So we're definitely back to that situation where Britain will be on the front line, completely sort of subordinated to sort of US sort of military interests, and we will be in the crosshairs.
Yeah, so what is this relationship between Britain and America? Because we're supposed to have, I think, an independent nuclear deterrent. That was the idea of Winston Churchill.
Yeah, but it's not true, is it? I mean, we know that the missiles through which the warheads are launched in the nuclear submarines are leased by the US, sorry, leased from the US, and so we don't really have control over those sort of nuclear weapons. Also, the US, sorry. in terms of the, we're under NATO command, basically. Our nuclear weapons are under NATO command. And so, not only in terms of, where those nuclear weapons are deployed, but also, where they are targeted, how they are targeted, this is all determined by NATO. And so, the idea that they are independent is just sort of not true at all. And with the purchase of these F-35A fighter jets, that will only kind of intensify Britain's kind of subordination to, to the US in terms of sort of nuclear policy and nuclear use, because it will be US nuclear bombs on those F-35A fighter jets. And there's already kind of media coverage about the fact that Donald Trump will be kind of, deciding when and where those nuclear bombs will be used.
Well, look, the nuclear clock is ticking away, isn't it? The United States last weekend launched an attack on the enrichment facilities over in Iran, without passing this through Congress or anything. He just decided to do it. I wonder what you make of the sort of international tensions. There's very little talk about the Israeli nuclear weapons. And certainly when it comes to a belligerent country, Israel seems to be far more invading Lebanon, invading Syria. Obviously, we know about what's going on with the hideous attacks on civilians in Gaza, tens of thousands of people dying in Gaza. They seem to be the belligerent ones, but they've got the nukes.
Totally. I mean, it's absolute nuclear hypocrisy, and this is something that we have been saying loud and clear, campaigning very strongly the moment that Israel launched its illegal attacks on Iran, that this was all about. It's posed as being sort of fears around Iran's nuclear program, but when you look at the context, when you look at the background and the role that both the US and Israel have played in sabotaging talks and the international framework that was set up specifically to bring about a kind of a peaceful sort of resolution in relation to Iran's nuclear program, it was totally sabotaged by Trump. And by the sort of the Israeli kind of military in relation to Trump, Iran had agreed to the JCPOA, so the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, put together by the UN Security Council, and that sort of imposed very sort of tight kind of inspection regime on Iran. Iran was, agreed to all of this, agreed to reduce its uranium enrichment and also its stockpile of enriched uranium, and to these very intensive inspections. The other side of that agreement was that the US would lift these really crippling sanctions that it placed on Iran, really, having a very, very serious impact on the lives of the Iranian population, a total kind of collective punishment approach. And in 2018, Trump walked out of that agreement when the time came for the US to deliver and lift those sanctions. And instead, he intensified them. So, completely sort of sabotaging. If he was so concerned about, making sure that Iran was not going to be sort of developing nuclear weapons, that framework was making it work. And so he clearly, was not concerned about that. In terms of Israel, we know that when talks were resumed with Biden, that Israel launched sort of cyber attacks on the Natanz nuclear facility. There's evidence to sort of show this was definitely Israel, and that was all again about sabotaging these talks. So it was clear that they really were not interested, in the supposed like threat of Iran's nuclear program. And really, this has always been about regime change in Iran. This is about sort of Israel wanting to dominate the region and to have no opposition now, in particular, to its genocidal war against the Palestinian people. And we know that this is, also the sort of the policy of the US administration. So, very, very dangerous. And also, the bombing of these nuclear facilities, incredibly reckless, incredibly dangerous. That's why the International Atomic Energy Authority, the sort of the director spoke out so strongly on this, condemning the bombings and saying how, this was sort of a breach of international law, of the UN Charter, because precisely because, it could seriously damage these facilities. It, could result in radiation being released into the atmosphere, or also sort of meltdown of nuclear reactors. I mean, very like incredibly reckless, very, very dangerous things that both Iran and then subsequently the US did. And none of this was necessary. I mean, the idea that you use this kind of overwhelming, military force to try and sort of stop a country from getting nuclear weapons when there's absolutely no evidence that they had them. I just think, it's had massive sort of reverberations across the region, and sets a very kind of dangerous precedent. So,
Now, do you believe the Iranians have no nuclear weapons then?
well, both the International Atomic Energy Authority say that they don't have any evidence that Iran has a nuclear weapons program, and also the US intelligence back in March, head of the US intelligence said the same thing. So they're
Well, hang on,
the risk.
Tulsi Gabbard, she's changed her mind last weekend about that.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Well, I mean, I suppose we kind of go
On
by what
a
we.
tweet.
Yeah, nice. I mean, these tweets are pretty horrifying, and I find kind of pretty chilling when it's about sort of threatening war and all that sort of stuff. But certainly in relation to the International Atomic Energy Authority, agency, sorry, they have sort of said that we don't have evidence that they are developing a nuclear weapons program. I
Well,
mean,
I mean, an
our
attack
concern
on
is.
them is likely to make them think twice about. They had a fatwa, by the way, a religious edict from the leader saying these are unethical weapons. It almost sounds like they were members of CND.
Well, I mean, also, I mean, they're signatories to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, and repeatedly said that they wanted to return to the talks. They don't want to develop nuclear weapons. You had this sort of, very important opportunity to take up, their request for continuing the talks, and instead you had this horrific bombing campaign. So, it's I think it is sort of very, very sort of serious situation. And what comes next? I mean, certainly from CND's point of view, we very much hope that the ceasefire holds. That's critical, and that we do kind of go back to talks. But you also have to deal with the kind of the wider issue, which is, that you have these countries like Israel and the US that just act with impunity, breach international law, left, right, and centre. And this is massively kind of destabilizing a very already kind of very, very dangerous situation. But also the sort of the nuclear weapon states are completely kind of complicit in this sort of nuclear hypocrisy. It's not, it's not just the US, it's not just, Israel, but like Britain as well. All these countries that have signed up to the NPT saying that, they will take steps to disarm their nuclear weapons. And what are they doing? They are modernizing, they're replacing, they're expanding, like you have with Britain, with the F-35A fighter jets. And meanwhile, the non-nuclear weapon states are just supposed to sort of carry on, abiding by the NPT. And you even have a situation where, Britain, if it was sort of made explicit again in the Strategic Defence Review, where it talks about it justifies its right to use nuclear weapons against non-nuclear weapon states that have signed the NPT that they view are in breach of their obligations. And I think most people would read that as that's a veiled threat to Iran. So you literally have nuclear weapon states saying that they can nuke, a non-nuclear weapon state in order to stop them from getting nuclear
But
weapons.
I
And your
mean, they
point
must be
about
looking over towards North Korea, over in Iran, and thinking, God, we really do need nuclear weapons if we're going to dissuade an attack.
I mean, that's our biggest concern, is that what this is really doing, is it's going to sort of push countries, like Iran into developing nuclear weapons, which is, very, very serious and not the direction that we need to be going in at all. But when you have countries like Britain that again sort of say, nuclear weapons are absolutely central to our defense and our security, well, you just extend that logic, don't you? And that means that every country should have nuclear weapons, if it's so important to Britain's security, why isn't it so important to others? So, it's we really have to bring this back to the fact that the nuclear weapon states are massively, driving nuclear proliferation. And so we've got to try and sort of halt this terrible sort of drive, this nuclear weapons drive, and bring them back to the sort of international frameworks, and to the kind of the negotiation table where they are looking at disarming their nuclear weapons.
Well, everything seems to be going in the opposite direction, Sophie. We've just had a meeting of NATO, we've had the G7, etc., and they are all talking about massive expansion in, you mentioned, didn't you, with the F-35s, for example, massive expansion in the military generally, but specifically nuclear weapons too.
Yes. No. I mean, as I say, it's an incredibly dangerous time, but we're finding that because the situation is so dangerous. There's a real kind of growing opposition to it again. You know, like you sort of talked at the beginning about the 80s. You know, we're finding more and more people are taking part in direct action at you know, military bases like Lake and Heath. More and more people are kind of getting involved and joining CND. And I think that's because people recognize that the situation is becoming more and more dangerous. And we know what's driving that. It's the Trump administration, it's the NATO leadership, which are completely driving, you know, this huge increase in military spending.
Well, and particularly nuclear, because I mean, you said earlier about the NATO have some sort of role in nuclear weapons in command. Now, I thought that the British, we have nuclear weapons of our own, and we will go along with NATO if we choose to. So it sounds to me as if maybe the ballpark's been shifting, the goalposts have been shifting more towards NATO making some of these decisions.
Well, I mean, I suppose you look like where does the power lie? And like look at the behavior of the Starmer government. I mean, it's literally like Trump says jump and they say how high. You know, because we're now in a situation where they have committed to increase military spending to 5% of GDP by 2035, and they're going to increase that sooner, you know. So I sort of feel that the British government is very much sort of subordinated to the US and to NATO, and that is definitely reflected in the you know, the NATO agreements, and certainly in relation to nuclear, you know, nuclear weapons policy. I mean, the Strategic Defence Review had you know, former NATO Secretary General sort of sitting on its review board. So it's really clear that this is being kind of led by NATO.
So not interesting organization. I remember doing a talk about NATO and being quite surprised doing the research for it at just how many Nazi generals were in the early days of NATO, were put in some quite important positions in the 1950s and 1960s, for example. But there's another aspect to all of this, Sophie, and that is when you turn up for a rally, when you go and do a protest, the government is also clamping down on that in all sorts of different ways. And they're now talking about, for example, with Palestine Action, which is a non-violent direct action group, slating them as terrorists and also putting restrictions on just normal peaceful demonstrations.
Yeah, no, totally. And like, this is because, you know, governments are trying to defend the indefensible, aren't they? They're trying to sort of defend the fact that they're complicit in a genocide. You know, they're failing to kind of arrest war criminals when they come to this country. And, you know, we're putting the spotlight on them, aren't we? We're exposing this illegality. We're exposing the complicity, and they don't want that. And so, you know, that's why it's happening. And like, you know, it always sort of shows why this idea that old protest doesn't work. Protest definitely works. Otherwise, you know, governments wouldn't go to such lengths to try and stop us from doing it. So, and of course, the situation with, you know, prescription of Palestine Action is very, you know, is very serious. I mean, CND's got a very sort of strong history. You know, in fact, Britain as a whole has got a very sort of strong history of like non-violent direct action, hasn't it? In terms of Greenham Common, and, you know, actions at Lake and Heath, Trident Ploughshares, you know, all these organisations, people have seen that there are times when you have to, you know, break into bases, that you know, you do have to kind of break those laws in order to stop, you know, a far greater crime from being committed. And that's absolutely critical. You know, I kind of work with Angie Zelter, who's very involved in the Lake and Heath Alliance for Peace and was sort of at Greenham. You know, she was part of an incredible action that they broke into a base and they smashed the nose cone of a Hawk jet that was going to be sort of flown out to, you know, to commit kind of massacres. And, you know, that was exactly their defense, that they are trying to sort of stop a, you know, a greater crime, and they were acquitted. So, you know, it really, and I think that's because people were on their side. And this is the other thing, isn't it, where they're sort of trying to kind of get rid of juries and that sort of thing, because being sort of tried by our peers basically feel the same way as us. There's this really widening gap between the people who supposedly represent us politically, but also how we're reflected in the mainstream media. It's just not how people feel. It's not people's views. It's not people's beliefs, and it's not what we need, and it's not in our interests. And that's kind of that gap is kind of getting wider and wider. But with all of these sort of struggles, it kind of makes us stronger and it brings more people into the movement. I mean, I'm sure you were like horrified as we were when the police kind of like stormed the Quakers meeting house, with tasers to arrest people there who were having a discussion about climate action and Palestine. And the Quakers had an event outside New Scotland Yard, and like over 500 people joined that, who'd probably never sort of like necessarily been sort of involved in the Quakers before. But like that's what happens, isn't it, when we're kind of under attack? It means that we're we recognize the importance of solidarity, and that's never been more important.
Okay, so when it comes to smashing up a plane that's about to be used by a dictator somewhere, whether it's disabling some little trolley that's going to be used to put a nuclear bomb on a bomber, American bomber sitting here at Fairford or wherever, and even with marches in the streets, rallies, does any of this really make any difference? Because you do wonder sometimes whether actually this is just the law of the jungle, and if someone wants to nuke somebody, that they're going to get on and do it.
Well, I mean, overwhelming kind of evidence, in terms of diaries of, political leaders that have been, declassified, certainly around sort of nuclear issues, shows that they are always very, very concerned about public opinion on this issue. And it has been, public protests that sort of forced, governments to sort of disarm, when they kind of didn't want to. I mean, the height of the sort of the Cold War, when you did eventually sort of see Gorbachev and Reagan sort of sitting down to sign the INF, the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, as it's called, which was all about destroying like thousands of sort of nuclear missiles. Ronald Reagan didn't really want to get rid of all of their missiles, but it was because of the huge strength of feeling and the massive protests across Britain and Western Europe that forced those political leaders in those countries to say, look, you need to get rid of your missiles and your nuclear weapons here, because we can't keep control of our populations. So it totally works. It totally works. And we know that in terms of the Iraq war, like the millions of people that came out onto the streets and were sort of protesting throughout that period, we know that the US had actually wanted to kind of bomb Iran very quickly after it had invaded Iraq, but they felt that they couldn't do it because of the huge scale of the protests. So it definitely it holds things up. It puts obstacles in the way of like this horrific drive to war. Anything that like puts those obstacles in the way is absolutely critical. Any life that can be saved is absolutely critical. But also in terms of showing to, for instance, Palestinian people in Gaza that we are with them all the time, and it's not in our name. This is absolutely horrific what is being done, and we will never stop protesting until this genocide, comes to an end. For them to know that that is what's going on, we know that people say this really means so much to us. So it's also about showing your humanity. That is also very kind of powerful globally.
So, where does this leave this wonderful word, democracy?
Yeah, well, it's very much undermined, isn't it? I mean, I think also this is again where Britain's membership of NATO is so kind of corrosive, because, as I say, we have these bases where they are, literally kind of they're literally sort of we lease them to the US, but then we have no say over what goes on in those bases. So, they can bring nuclear weapons here. They can, they can commit sort of genocide, and, supposedly we don't have any say in it. And, in the case of these F-35A fighter jets, there's been no vote in Parliament. So, nuclear weapons and nuclear weapons industry is just sort of, it's like well known for its secrecy and for its completely undermining sort of democracy, and all this stuff about, oh, this is in the interest of national security, we can't disclose A, B, and C. And we know that under the previous government, Ben Wallace, the then defense secretary, he brought in this exclusion order, which means that on any US base in Britain, any sort of visiting forces, they don't have to meet our UK radiation emergency plans. Basically, they just don't have to abide by that kind of legislation. And it's a bit like, there is a rule for them and there's a rule for us. And the reason why, really, Ben Wallace brought that in was so that when these US nuclear bombs come to Britain, local authorities would not be informed about it, because they are the ones that are responsible for these emergency plans. And so,
Right.
by
Well,
bringing
it seems to
in
me that
this.
secrecy is more important than safety.
Oh, totally. Yeah,
So they're not.
exactly.
I know CND is planning action of various sorts. Can you tell us what's going on over, in the foreseeable future?
Well, in response to the government's, decision, or we can't say government, actually, can we? Starmer's decision that we're going to buy these F-35A fighter jets. They're going to be stationed at RAF Marham, which is in King's Lynn. So we're going to be having a protest there this Saturday at 1 o'clock outside the main gate. So we would really encourage, as many people as possible to take part in that, because we have to really ratchet up our pressure on this government. This is a very important campaign. This is all about the British government trying to massively expand its nuclear capabilities, and we've got to make it clear that we will not let this happen.
Okay, any other campaigns, rallies, that sort of thing coming up?
Well, we have ongoing protests at RAF Lakenheath. Those take place every month. I think it's the last Saturday in the month. We're going to be at Marham this Saturday, but so from July onwards, those protests are happening. If the ceasefire between Iran and Israel breaks, then we will be definitely demonstrating at the Israeli embassy. So look out for that too. And then, of course, because it's the 80th anniversary of the US atomic bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, there are going to be ceremonies taking place across the country on the 6th of August and the 9th of August. So really encourage people to participate in those events, because it's about exposing the devastating human costs of nuclear war. We have a lot of discussion about using nuclear weapons in this very kind of blasé way, and it's about kind of bringing it back to the reality of the horrors of nuclear war. So those will be taking place around the country, and we'll also be having MP Jeremy Corbyn and former Green leader Caroline Lucas will be in Japan as part of our delegation, with the Japanese people and with the Hibakusha, really wanting to sort of bring home those messages.
Okay, Sophie Bolt, General Secretary of CND, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure.